Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. This is the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, won't do any of that. But we do help focus you on the events of the week through the events, through what now? Yeah, I'm a little off today, that's all. I'll just admit it right from the get-go. Didn't get enough sleep last night. Didn't get enough sleep this morning. Didn't get enough sleep this early afternoon. Anyway. What was I saying? We focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought is what I meant to say. And, we're back 2 weeks in a row for the first time this summer because the name of the show is the Weekly Worldview. So we're trying to do at least two back-to-back shows for everybody out there. And, where to start? Should we start with the question of, is the President of the United States undermining the intelligence community with his the Helsinki affair and all that, all the hullabaloo surrounding all that? Is the president undermining the intelligence community? Well, if he is, they started it. So there, that's all I'll say. I've never been a big fan of the intelligence community. Never been a big fan of Donald Trump. So I don't really have a dog in that fight. I kind of find them both distasteful. Mm-hmm. But there's no doubt that they started it. And slowly but surely, he'll just fire everybody involved. Or they'll retire. Or, as sometimes happens in the intelligence community, they'll end up in Fort Marcy Park or something similar like that. But eventually, Trump will probably outlast. Can Trump outlast the deep state? Why am I getting into this? I could care less. Let's talk about how paranoid I am. Do you want to start with that? No, let's start with radiation from Fukushima. Did you read this one? The Daily Star in the United Kingdom reports that wine made in the west coast of the United States contains isotopes from the Fukushima nuclear reactor meltdown fallout. Did you get that? That's kind of a shocking headline. You're definitely going to click through on that if you have a bottle of wine in your house that's from Northern California, right? So we all clicked on it. I clicked on it. The scientists said samples of both red and rosé wines contained cesium-137. That sounds scary. Cesium-137 in my rosé? That's very discomforting. Yes, it appears that the radioactive material was carried in the clouds from Japan to the United States, and the radioactive fallout entered the water system through the rain. It's like, what can you do about that? We're helpless. We're all going to be victims of cesium poisoning. Isn't that what Vladimir Putin uses? Isn't that one of his favorites?
His favorite.
Cesium? You get down into the article, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th paragraph in, you read that experts say that in such small doses, cesium-137 does not pose a risk to health. In fact, the levels of radioactivity measured in the wine is actually lower than naturally occurring radiation, generally, in grapes and wine and in just about everything. But they got their headline in there. Radiation in the wine! Oh! That's the knee-jerk anti-nuclear bent of reporters these days. They want the headline to just reinforce the idea that nuclear energy is dangerous. Which is why it needs to be done properly. That's all. And I don't want to cast aspersions on anyone who ran the Fukushima plant because I don't think, it was an earthquake for crying out loud. The earth starts quaking and it's kind of hard to prepare for something like that. But nuclear power is good and it should be done well. And I long for the day when every neighborhood has a small reactor and it supplies virtually free energy to everybody. Every farm in America could have a little compact, basically like a battery, but they could be nuclear and they could last for decades and provide very cheap energy. Someday, that's one of my dreams. Only because I read an article and I considered investing in a company that makes these. It's basically a nuclear battery that you bury in your yard and it power your house for like 100 years. Sounds like a great idea. I don't know why it hasn't happened. I don't know. Maybe because Elon Musk has somehow... By the way, can I officially say that I don't like Elon Musk? Have I ever talked about him on the air? I don't think I've ever talked about him. But the whole thing with him trying to send a submarine to rescue the Thai boys and then calling one of the chief rescuers or implying that he's a pedophile. I have a thing about people who imply that other people are pedophiles. It's like, well, where did that come from? I mean, you know. Anyway, I just have my questions about Elon Musk. That's all. I don't want to imply anything about him, but he did imply that someone else was a pedophile, like out of thin air, which strikes me as odd. And there seems to be a lot of that kind of talk going around in the upper echelons of the top 1%, the ones who attend the ones who have the box seats at Burning Man Festival. There seems to be a lot of pedophilia talk amongst them. The Hollywood types and the producers and the whole circle that Elon Musk runs with just gives me the creeps, that's all. And now he officially gives me the creeps. And I always thought that he was something of a... Well, let's see, it's a family-friendly show. So there's a real simple way to say it, but I can't say it that way. Let's just say that he's made his living selling something or being an artist with something less than the truth. That's not a very... Anyway, yeah, he's an artist of sorts. We'll just leave it at that. Okay, so there, we got your radioactive wine. Don't freak out. It's going to be okay. As scary and dangerous as nuclear energy is, the cesium in your wine from Napa is below naturally occurring levels. But we got our headline. There we go. All right, so my extremely attractive audio engineer and I, we attended a concert last night at Coors Field here in Colorado. What would you think that place holds? Maybe 25,000, 30,000 people? Rarely am I in a group of people that big, but I generally don't like it. And so I'm walking down onto the field, getting ready to hear Chrissy Hynde from the Pretenders, who can still sing. She can still sing. She was good. She put in a workmanlike performance. Hit all the notes. She played the harmonica. It was good. She was all right. We didn't even know she was on the bill. Boy, you know your career has kind of is on the backside of the hill when you're the opening act and you're not even listed in the program or on the tickets or anything. We're sitting there and they start setting up the drums, and I said, look, the drums say the Pretenders. And the guy next to me goes, oh, yeah, they're the opening act. I'm like, what are you talking about? Chrissy Hynde and the Pretenders? Really? Oh. They didn't even make it onto the program. Anyway, Now, I'm walking around on the field, the equivalent of center field at Coors Field, and I couldn't help myself. I started looking from all the angles, turning around in a 360-degree turn, and I noticed that as far as I could tell, only one building in the downtown Denver area appeared to have a clear enough view of the outfield that a maniac could start pouring bullets down into the crowd. That's what I think about. Do you think anybody else thinks about that kind of stuff? Now, I don't know what it was like for the people sitting up in the nosebleed seats. They probably sitting ducks with like 100 different buildings. But as far as where our seats were, only one building. Anyway, this is what I think about. That's how paranoid I am. I actually look around and think about things like this. I think maybe other people think about it too. They may not dwell on it as much as I do. But I think we all have experienced an uptick in just the overall angst in society. Just the overall, so a level of fear and just instability and, well, I wasn't afraid, but, you know, I thought about it, that's all. And who needs to think about that kind of stuff? You're out, you're trying to enjoy, and the thought crosses your mind that a maniac could begin to pour gunfire down into the crowd. It could happen. It's been known to happen in the past. It could happen. So anyway, let's see. Should we move into the Megalayan Age? Huh? Last night we were in the Stone Age, or no? What do you call it? The geriatric age. Everyone in Coors Field was at least 50, except their kids.
Except me.
That's right. Except my extremely attractive audio engineer, and a lot of little kids. I don't know. I wouldn't bring my kids to a concert. Although I will say that none of the acts that we saw up on the stage used any profanity or anything. Well, they talked about pot, but you can't help it. You're in Colorado. You got to get your obligatory big cheer for marijuana, you know. Anyway, I wouldn't bring my kids, but, well, you know.
But the people around it is,
yeah.
Sometimes they say stuff. Like,
yeah.
What
happened?
The divorced guy.
Oh, my goodness. So I'm in the line for the bathroom. In between Journey. Journey had just closed. A good show, by the way. Good performance. And then there's a bathroom break before Def Leppard comes on. All right, I'll admit it. It was a Def Leppard concert. Yeah, okay. I'm in line for the bathroom. And it's really long. Really long. But it's moving right along and, you know, bumping elbows up there with everybody trying to get into the bathroom. And somebody made a comment on how long it was taking. And I said, well, imagine, I said, just be glad we're not in the ladies' line. That's awful. Can you imagine being in line to get into the women's bathroom? And this drunk guy behind me says, they deserve it. That's fine. They deserve it. You know why? Hey, you know why divorce costs so much? I said, no. Why? Because they're worth it. This guy, obviously, recently divorced, somewhat bitter about it. And I assume it took a financial toll on the fella, apparently. But anyway, there you have it. Report from the bathroom line at Coors Field. Just to give you a little snapshot of society. Of civilization, circa 2018, not to be confused with the Paleolithic Age, but this brings me to the new geological age that has recently been identified. Yes, let's see here. I hope I'm pronouncing this properly. Megalayan. The Megalayan Age is a new slice of time on the geologic time scale thing they have. They have a chart that goes back 14 billion years, I think. Is it 14.365 billion? And the Earth is 4.57 billion, something like that. They have a chart. It's in all the colleges. You send your kid to university, and that chart will be slapped up on the wall. If they're studying a hard science, if they're not just doing film or dance or something like that. Anyway, so they've proposed, let's see here. The Megalayan Age was proposed 6 years ago by the International Commission on Stratigraphy. Stratigraphy, I said. And the International Union of Geologic Sciences has ratified their proposal. Scientists who proposed this new Megalayan Age point to a shift in oxygen isotopes caused by a massive global drought around 4,200 years ago. And researchers believe the drought may have lasted up to a century. A century, I said. Yes, yes. Anyway. Now, I think this is probably accurate, this isotope, this shift in isotopes, 4200, because there are credible people who theorize that there was a massive worldwide drought that may have lasted about a century right before Noah's flood. And so that's quite possible that what these scientists are seeing, by the way, they get back 4200 years, they can actually tell some real science and some real history. You get back into the, 11, 12 billion years ago, I have some questions about all that. But this, I could buy this. I mean, it's interesting. I'm willing to give them the time of day. Oh, but let's see. Extreme Tech reports. This is from extremetech.com. They report that some researchers think the chart should recognize a newer slice of time known as the Anthropocene Epoch. And that's what we'd be living in right now. And that is an epoch that would recognize the global changes precipitated by human activity. They want to define an epoch in which the humans destroyed the planet and released all the greenhouse gases, and they put all the cesium-137 in the grapes. That's what everybody wants to be. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, and I just need to point out that I'm somewhat suspicious of the Def Leppard guitar player with the whole shirtless thing, and I think he rubbed canola oil all over himself. Before. Now, last time we went, I thought that he was just sweating a lot, and so, you take your shirt off. Well, he's a rock star. But this time, before the lights even went up, he was all, anyway, I just suspect he's got something. He obviously works out really hard. The guy's obviously dedicated. He's in the gym. He's like 75 years old.
No, not that old.
He's got a six pack. But I mean, to rub the canola oil on, really? Come on, man. I think that's a bit much. All right. But other than that, it was a good show. Now, we were just talking about geological ages, and it brings to mind the obvious question. Is how will paleontologists view San Francisco when they dig it up 2,000 years from now and they find the layers and layers of human feces in the street? What will they assume could have possibly happened in San Francisco? Well, we theorize there must have been a massive loss of all indoor plumbing at some point in the history of Northwestern United States, and people suddenly, at least in the San Francisco Bay Area. No, seriously, I've got a story here from NBC. San Francisco has a new mayor whose name is London Breed, which sounds like a horse at the Kentucky Derby. I don't know. London Breed. I don't mean to insult her. If she resembles a horse in any way, I apologize. That I might have offended anyone. She did her first one-on-one interview since taking office, And she talked a little bit about the homeless advocacy groups that the city government there in San Francisco funds. So the government in San Francisco funds homelessness. They actually fund homelessness by funding. Well, you know what really drives homelessness in San Francisco? Number one, it's the weather, because the weather is nice almost all the time. And the city is run by a bunch of undisciplined brats who were raised by undisciplined heathen parents. And they allow people to sleep and go to the bathroom anywhere in San Francisco. And so you got the weather, and then you got the student council running the city. Before you know it, well, I'll just read what she says. She says, the homeless advocacy groups that receive funding from the city of San Francisco need to better educate the homeless to clean up after themselves. I mean, you know what this reminds me of? It reminds me when I went into the service. It's really weird. You get to the first day of boot camp, and they start teaching you as if you're an infant. They teach you how to take a shower, where to start washing, and where to finish. They teach you how to brush your teeth. And the odd thing is as you sit around, you look and you can see the light is going on for some people. They hadn't really been clued in on a number of these. I know the whole shower taking thing. I'll explain that someday. But there's actually a United States military authorized shower technique that they teach you. So it's as if you've fallen out of the birth canal and you end up at boot camp. They start teaching you some of the most fundamental things. And here's the mayor of San Francisco acting as if the homeless need to be educated to know how to clean up after themselves. So, well, I mean, when you're defecating in the street, there's very little cleanup required, because the city officials have handcuffed the city's police so that they can't arrest these bums. They can't really do much about it. So why would the homeless... what do you think she means here? Homeless advocacy groups need to better educate the homeless. I think what she means is she's going to try to offer them more money, the advocacy groups. She's going to offer them some more money and probably create a few. If they'll create a few positions in their board and in their executive offices for a few of her relatives, then she'll offer them some more money. They can begin better educating the homeless. Anyway, she says, as mayor, I work hard to make sure your programs are funded. Okay, well, you just got elected, so you haven't been working that hard at anything yet. You just walked in the door. But you know what? I think that she's been at the public trough there in San Francisco for her entire adult life. So she probably has worked very hard to make sure that the programs to educate the homeless are funded. And I work hard, so I want to ask you to work with your clients. These are the bums defecating in the street. She calls them their clients. It's as if there's a business relationship between the guy pooping in the street and the guy getting money from the governor. It's the mayor. Well, I'm sure the governor gives his share too. All right. Please work with your clients. Ask them to have respect for the community and clean up after themselves. She's asking them, basically, would you scrape up your feces off the street? And the homeless have basically said, in so many words, no, we're not going to scrape up our feces off the street. Anyway, she was asked by the reporter, what is she going to do? Oh, I suppose I should do this quote first so that you have some context here. She was asked about the state of the streets in San Francisco, and listen to what she said. She said, I will say there is more feces on the sidewalk than I've ever seen growing up here. Quote. Now, so she's a lifelong San Francisco resident. She lived there her whole life. She grew up there. And I find it odd that she says, not that there's feces on the sidewalk, which is how most people would freak out if all of a sudden there were feces on the side. And Sarah, she's bothered that there are more feces than she was ever used to. That's San Francisco's definitely on a whole different level when it comes to the whole excrement experience. So she's bothered that there's more than she was ever used to. So she was asked by the reporters, what does she want to do? Harsher penalties against those who litter or defecate on city streets? She was actually asked that by a reporter in San Francisco. And the first thing she says, well, I didn't express anything about a penalty. I don't want to talk about penalties. We don't want to penalize anyone who defecates in our streets. And then I kept reading to see what was her plan, aside from penalties, since obviously she's not going to be persuaded that anyone littering or defecating in the street or stealing a shopping cart or sleeping outside in the road should be penalized in any way. So we read through all of this, and never did I see anything that even resembled anything having anything to do with a plan to even reduce or limit the amount of feces in the street. Mayor, could we maybe go have like a goal for square tonnage of feces every year? And then kind of like the carbon tax, every year we could try to bring that down a little bit, like CO2 emissions. Like a sweet soda pop, you know, we could keep, just give us an estimate of how many square tonnage there is and we can start setting goals to try to reduce. So that's what happens when godless heathens run your city for the better part of a century. And, well, there you go. You end up with more feces than you, well, than you were used to growing up. Now, me, where I grew up, I don't recall human feces in the street at all.
No.
Anyway, I think I want to change the subject. But I don't want to go to trannies. No. So we got to skip over. Speaking of trannies, let's go to Kimberly Guilfoyle. See, San Francisco. What? Wasn't she married to any Twosome Newsome out there? She was.
I don't know.
Oh, well, I'm going to prove it right here because I've got a news article about Kim Guilfoyle. Kimberly Guilfoyle, despite the fact that she resembles a transgendered person, I'm going to say whatever I want about her. I don't like her, okay? You know why? The main reason is because she's a liberal, and she's bamboozled a lot of ignorant people into thinking she's some kind of conservative, and I think it's mostly men who just want to look at her cleavage. That's what I think, okay? That's why I think she was on Fox News. I don't think there's any other reason she was ever given any job ever in her entire career. Okay? And that's just based on listening to her and her level of intellect. Well, she's leaving Fox News, apparently. Now, she has been apparently a host on a show called The Five that I haven't seen in a long time. I thought that show went off the air. But apparently it's still on, and she was still on it, but now she's leaving. They say a person familiar with Kimberly Guilfoyle's plans, who was not authorized to speak publicly about them, spoke publicly to this interviewer at CBS and said, Guilfoyle, who is now dating Donald Trump Jr., she's dating, in quotation marks, she's dating him in the... In the full modern application of that word. She's dating Donald Trump Jr. She's going to join a PAC, the America First PAC, and she's going to be promoting Donald Trump's great record all over the country in the lead up to the 2020 election. And so she's leaving. Now, here's the rundown on Kimberly Guilfoyle and why I don't like her. Okay? First of all, she was married to Gavin Newsom, who was a city supervisor back in San Francisco. He's been busily destroying San Francisco and the greater Northern California area for the better part of 20 years. And Kimberly Guilfoyle was married to him. He's a flaming liberal. He's a communist and a homosexualist and a pervert and a deviant and an enemy of everything good and right. Everything American, Gavin Newsom is an enemy of all that. When I say all my enemies, I'm talking about Gavin Newsom specifically. And Kimberly Guilfoyle was married to him. And so that right there makes me very suspicious of her. Now listen to this. It gets more suspicious and more distasteful as you start to unravel Kimberly Guilfoyle's tawdry and embarrassing career and life in general. Her divorce from Gavin was finalized in February 28, 2006. On May 27, 2006, she married a guy named Eric and gave birth to his child October 4th, 2006. So let's do the math, children. If we're familiar with the gestational period of the human fetus, we can see that Kimberly Guilfoyle was impregnated by her boyfriend while she was still married to Gavin Newsom. Gavin, of course, has no problem with that. Me, on the other hand, I find it very distasteful. I would never hire a person who would do that. So let's see. She was impregnated before she divorced Gavin. Now, Guilfoyle and this fella Eric, eventually they got divorced too. Doesn't really say why. And now in May of 2018, it was leaked that now Guilfoyle is dating Donald Trump Jr. And they began dating while Trump was going through his divorce with his whatever most third, fourth, fifth wife. I don't know how many wives he's had. But she started dating him while he was getting divorced. Let's see. This is WikiLeaks. What is this? Wikipedia. They say Guilfoyle had been friends with the Trump couple for years before they went. They had some hard times, and then she, whatever. Now she's with Don Jr. Apparently, she was more so friends with Don Jr. Than his wife, especially now. And of course, there's no word if she's been impregnated by Don, or if she was impregnated by him while she was married or he was married. Anyway, reports of her pregnancies do appear to refute the common misconception that she is a transgendered person. You see, I wanted her real bad, and I was about to give in. And that's when she started talking about true love, started talking about sin. I said, honey, I live with you for the rest of my life. She said, no hugging, no kissing, until you make me your wife. My honey, my baby, don't put my love on no shelf. She said, don't give me no lines and keep your hands to yourself. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. And so now that we've done the Guilfoyle story, we just natural segue would be into the transgender-related stories. But we'll try to go through them quick so that my extremely attractive audio engineer doesn't become physically ill, which is possible. Now, we go first to the identity crisis file, where a transgendered woman in Arizona is speaking out. And we all ask, do they ever just shut up anymore? Is this all they do is speak out? You can't read the news without some tranny speaking out all over you, right up in your face with it all. So she's speaking out. She says a pharmacist denied her hormone prescription. Yeah. And now CVS, the pharmacy, well, they've fallen all over themselves to apologize. The ink wasn't even dry on the posting up at the ACLU website before CVS had already sent out a heartfelt apology. This does not reflect our values or our commitment to inclusion and non-discrimination of the mentally ill. No, they didn't say mentally ill. They just said non-discrimination against tranny. So, and now we don't even know if this is true, because number one, the person involved is obviously mentally deranged, taking hormones to change, it's a man taking hormones to try to to try to change into the physical appearance of a woman, which is the definition of mentally deranged. Now, so there you have that. And then number two, this all comes from a post, a blog post on the ACLU of Arizona website, where this tranny posted her accusation against CVS. And CVS apologized immediately, if not sooner. And I don't know if they've offered her some free hormones or whatever. Anyway, so there you have that. And so why am I doing this story? So it's as if, and it could be that I'm just hypersensitive to this. You know, like checking out the tall buildings whenever I'm downtown in a large group of people. It could be that I'm just paranoid, but it seems like the news media in general is dedicated to pushing one transgendered story every week up above the fold. There's got to be at least one every week. And for whatever reason, Matt Drudge cannot help but link to them. And the boys at the boys and girls at Breitbart as well can't help but link. It's like the sex robot thing that Matt Drudge is obsessed with. He's obsessed with it. It's like he links to a sex robot story every week. I don't know what it is. It's like Elon Musk bringing up the whole pedophile thing out of thin air. You got to wonder what these guys got in their basement. That's all. I think maybe they need to be interviewed by law enforcement to find out what's going on there. Anyway, let's move here to the Christian doctor. A Christian doctor in the United Kingdom has been fired for refusing to refer to trannies by their preferred gender pronouns. What's a gender pronoun? I studied, one of my favorite topics back when I was in school was English and literature. And I remember pronouns, but I never remember gender pronouns. You know why? Because there was no such thing as gender pronouns. The gender of the pronoun was always obvious from the pronoun itself. But now we have to clarify. This is a gender pronoun. You know what that means? That's when you're using the wrong pronoun for a tranny. That's now a gender pronoun. Wink, wink, nod, nod. And we're all supposed to act normal as if there's nothing wrong with that. All right, so I got that out of my system. Now, this comes from our hero file because we want to honor Dr. David McAreth. He's a hero. A hero is someone that does something right even when it costs them their career, which is what it has done for this fine doctor. His contract was terminated on the grounds that he refused to use transgendered pronouns and that could be considered harassment under Britain's 2010 Equality Act. And so he says that this termination has effectively ended his medical career. He's a medical doctor. He's 55 years old. He's probably at the top of his game. And now his career is over because in England, if you want to be a doctor, you have to work for the government. My guess is this guy could come to America and get a job. I'll bet he could get hired by a private practice and do quite well. And the weather's better. And the dental care here is fantastic. So here's what David McAreth, the doctor, says. He says, as a Christian, I believe gender is determined biologically and genetically. All right, he said, as a Christian, he could be thrown out of England. He might have no choice but to leave England now. He's come out as a Christian. Now, he could have left that out, and he could have just said, he could have left out the I believe, too, and just said gender is determined biologically and genetically, because that's a statement of fact. But the fact that he insisted on inserting the fact that he's a Christian, in my mind, makes him a hero. Because he's basically exposing himself to hostile fire so that the story will get out there that some of us are not going to comply with you mentally deranged sex perverts who insist that we have to use gender pronouns. We don't want to hurt other people by entertaining them in their delusion and their mental illness. We want to help people who are so confused and screwed up in the head that they think the boy who thinks he's a girl. I want to help that person. I don't want to call him her or she or any of that. Dr. Macris says, I knew that this could be the end of my work as a doctor, but I could not live with myself if I didn't speak up. It would be dishonest, and I didn't want to live a lie. And you know what? The doctor, it's not just him living a lie. It's him being forced to live a lie in order to get a paycheck. And this, in my mind, is this defines the mark of the beast. It's not going to be a 666 tattooed on your head. It's going to be you choosing affirmatively to deny what you know is right and true and to deny God in order to make a living. And people will do that. And they'll do it of their own volition. And they'll do it freely. They won't be. They're not going to tie you down and tattoo 666 on you. Don't worry about that. You're going to decide if you take the mark. And this doctor has decided not to take the mark. Congratulations, Dr. David Macarath, 55-year-old British doctor. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, from the Decline and Fall file, Sheffield University in the aforementioned United Kingdom has become the first university in the country with student housing open only to gays and transgendered. That's right. What do they call it in college? Would you go the dorms? They've got dorms now only for homos and trannies. And based on what we learned last week, it's just a matter of time before that's a fist fight goes down there like no tomorrow. The trannies and the lesbians will be going at it. Let's see. Sheffield says that we like to provide a safe space for students to defile one another. I'm sorry. I mean, to be themselves. We want them to be themselves. And so they're providing homosexual-only dorms. The university has received 30 homo-tranny applications so far. And they have currently only 12 rooms dedicated to homos and trannies. And obviously, there's a growing population of homos and trannies in Europe. So facilities will have to be adapted, obviously, to satisfy this growing and robust community. This is from the Telegraph, by the way, in London. And they report that, they say that a report from the gay rights group Stonewall this year found that 42% of LGBT students in the United Kingdom are forced to hide their sexuality at university. Forced to hide their sexuality. You know, I mean, don't we all hide our sexuality just out of common courtesy to everyone else? Nobody else wants to think about that. I mean, get over yourself, for crying out loud. We're trying to have a civilization here. Oh, man. Okay. So there we have that. Now let's get into genetic modification here. Because what you have in the transgendered community is just a social modification being forced upon an already functioning body politic. Now, but genetic modification, this is real. The tranny, that's not real. That's imagined, delusional craziness. But genetic modification is real, and it is upon us. Gene editing is real, and it is happening right now, so we need to figure out how to deal with it. Listen to this. The Guardian reports that the creation of babies whose DNA has been altered has received a green light from a United Kingdom ethics body. The Newfield Council on Bioethics said that changing the DNA of a human embryo could be morally permissible if it was in the interest, in the future child's interest. The future child? How can you alter the genetics of a future child? I mean, if it wasn't a child, you couldn't edit his genes, for crying out loud. This is from the Science Really file. Was there a little bit of extra? What's going on with that? Turn that off. All right. A future child. Okay. Now, what was the point? The report of course, has drawn criticism from a number of quarters. Scientists, according to researchers, scientists can, in principle, tweak the genetic code in sperm or in eggs or in embryos to change dramatically how future children develop. Gene editing could, in principle, prevent children from inheriting serious diseases caused by faulty genes. Now, there's all kinds of other evil applications of gene editing when it comes to pre-born children. There's no doubt about that. And only God-fearing doctors and scientists can be trusted with such technology and such procedures. And sadly, we lack those. But is that reason enough to outlaw the practice itself or to outlaw the technology that enables us to edit genes? I think not. But I'm open to enlightenment otherwise, and I'm really hard-pressed to know where are we going to find the God-fearing doctors we can trust to do this ethically.
From England.
That's it! His name, his name is Dr. David Makareth!
And you are one with the cause.
View, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's good to have you. And so there. Now we'll move into deeper into, this is from the Culture of Death file. And it's about palliative sedation, which I was not familiar with. But it's palliative sedation is, it's for sick people. And it's when a doctor gives a terminally ill patient enough sedatives to induce unconsciousness. The goal is to reduce or eliminate suffering, but in many cases, the patient dies without regaining consciousness. Once the doctors calibrate the dosage properly, well, doctors can calibrate the dosage basically to where you wake up or maybe you don't wake up, and there's a concern amongst just reasonable, decent people, God-fearing people, that palliative sedation is being used to kill people. And I have no doubt that it is. Palliative sedation, according to the Post-Gazette, from I don't know where, thepostgazette.com. It's legal everywhere. And it's been administered since the hospice care movement began in the 1960s. Even Catholic hospitals practice. In the vast majority of cases, it is accompanied by the... Oh, here we go. This is where you cross the line. It's pretty easy to see. In the vast majority of cases where palliative sedation is used to kill people, or where it's suspected, we don't want to accuse, it's all alleged, of course. It's accompanied by the cessation of food, drink, and antibiotics. When there's a cessation of food, drink, and antibiotics, I think that's killing somebody. It's fairly clear what's going on here. And again, a God-fearing doctor could judge rightly on how to administer the appropriate level of sedation to a sick person. But we no longer have very many of those, and the ones that they do have, at least in Britain, are being run out of the business. And so the killing will continue, and the guilt of innocent blood and the force of that will continue to build like the pressure inside a pressure cooker. And eventually, all that pressure from the guilt of all that innocent blood is going to blow someday, because that's the way God built the system. He built it that way. There's checks and balances. You hear people talk about checks and balances? Well, God built in checks and balances. Built into the physical and spiritual structure of the universe are checks and balances. There's an action and there's an equal and opposite reaction. And eventually it's going to blow. So that takes us to Brett Kavanaugh. And we're going to talk mostly about Anthony Kennedy and Roe versus Wade. But this is an article from The New Yorker this week that I recommend that you should read, because it brings to light some things that I've suspected for many years, and I'm sure I've heard them elucidated at times by people in my circle, but I've never read them in a publication from the left, like The New Yorker, which is a left-wing publication. And to me, this article really spells the... not a sea change, but I'm looking for another word. But I can't find it because I didn't get enough sleep this afternoon. Anyway, there's a change. The left is no longer hiding the fact that they're anti-Christ, anti-God. They're no longer hiding their long-term strategy to undermine God and the family and faith. They're naked and in the open about it now, and you can read it right here in The New Yorker, where they say, they report that Anthony Kennedy, the decision that Anthony Kennedy, Supreme Court Justice, co-authored in the Casey pro-abort opinion, featured a striking sentence. Here's what Anthony Kennedy wrote in the Casey ruling that upheld the right to kill innocent people. It upheld the court's opinion that we have the right to kill innocent people. Let me just be clear about that. Here's what Justice Kennedy wrote. At the heart of liberty is the right to define one's own concept of existence, of meaning, of the universe, and of the mystery of human life. Unquote. So that's one of the most dangerous statements ever written by anyone who has any influence on the governance of society. That's a terrifying statement. And this was penned into an official decision by the Supreme Court that we have the right to define our own concept of existence. And now here's what's stressed. So that in and of itself tells you that Anthony Kennedy was an evil and destructive influence on mankind in general, and that he'll occupy a particularly dark and hot corner of hell for all of eternity for what that unleashes upon people. But here's what The New Yorker says, that this surprised me that they published this for the world to see. They write that this idea that Anthony Kennedy codified, kicked off an evolution that led to his opinions holding that states could not criminalize homosexual sex and that they must allow homosexuals to marry. And they go on to say the legal and social and cultural changes that Roe v. Wade enabled are now so strongly entrenched in the country and specifically in the class of legal professionals that yada, yada, yada. So they've basically admitted that Roe versus Wade and Doe versus Casey and the child killing opinions basically have enabled everything that we're seeing destroy our culture. The homosexualization, the hypersexualization of everything was basically enabled by Roe v. Wade. And they basically lay out the fact that this is all part of a cultural revolution that began sometime in the 1960s and that continues to today. And then the New Yorker goes on to say to Donald Trump that if Donald Trump appoints someone who were to overturn Roe v. Wade, they say that would be a gift to the left. And they say the left would react similarly to the way the right reacted to Roe v. Wade. They say Roe v. Wade led to an intense backlash that fueled the powerful rise of modern conservative social movements. And they say that if Trump overturns Roe, that the same thing will happen on the left. Well, the same thing doesn't really have to happen on the left. It's already happened. And the New Yorker just lays out how they've basically experienced total victory over the past 50 years over, as I said, everything right and good and godly. They've had a victory over it all. Roe led to the rise of the modern conservative social movements, they say. And now this hits close to home. I've been involved in the conservative social movements. Many of you who've listened to the show, you've been involved in trying to create a movement to repair the damage being done by the child killers and the sexual perverts and the God haters. But were they conservative social movements that arose out of Roe? I think at the very beginning they were. I think they were at the very beginning, but then they were. Something happened. And these conservative social movements that had their genesis in the eminence of the penumbra of Roe v. Wade stopped at some point being movements. And they ended up becoming industries. They became industries, really, more than movements. And those industries, those pro-family, pro-life, conservative industries, the ones that you get the fundraising letters from on a regular basis, well, they have failed on all fronts. All fronts. Well, I shouldn't say on all fronts. They failed on a societal level. Now, they have managed to preserve some of their own families, I suppose. But on a civilizational scale, they failed. And I think in the end, we are all going to find out that it was because we were unwilling to give up our comfort and actually risk our careers, our lives, our fortunes, our sacred honor. That's why I think we failed. And I think history will look back rather unkindly upon us for what we have failed to do. And it hurts me to say that. It hurts my own ego to say that. But that's how I feel about it. There aren't very many of us who have the intestinal fortitude of the 55-year-old doctor, David Macrith, over in the United Kingdom, who basically lost his medical career over this. There just aren't very many of us. And, I don't want to end on a downer. I want to find, let's see, do I have something that's uplifting? And no, that's not good. That's horrible. Oh, here we go. Here's a story that's relatively innocuous. Something that we can close on. Have you heard about the new Russian spy? If you watch the news, you'd almost assume that Russian agent Maria Butina was actually arrested at Donald Trump's house and that she had an office in Trump Tower during the election. Have you heard about... Yes, she's in jail right now. And the mainstream media is doing all they can to connect her to the Trump campaign and everything that is Republican. But it turns out that Maria Butina was in the United States back in 2015, and she was meeting with Federal Reserve and Treasury Department officials who worked for Barack Obama, oddly enough. And now she's been arrested for, she didn't register as a foreign agent, apparently, is the charge. And of course, she's been hacking our democracy and all of that. Hey, you know what's been really depressing about this whole election meddling fiasco? Is that it really has become sad and depressing to hear so many conservatives worshiping democracy, practically bowing down and worshiping the idea that people should have the right to vote, to make laws, and it's just ridiculous. By the way, I'm anti-democracy. I don't believe in democracy. I don't think you are smart enough to choose who or and how they govern me. And I don't think I'm smart enough either. I think only God is smart enough. And so I think we need governing officials who fear God, and how we get them, I'm willing to debate that. But I'd rather not have the heathens voting for them, for crying out loud. So that's been really depressing. They're just worshiping democracy and how they've tampered with our democracy and meddled. They've meddled. By the way, that word meddle should be number one with a bullet on the pop charts right now. That word was practically dead. That word hadn't been uttered in about 25 years, meddling. I think the last time that was on Scooby-Doo. I would have gotten away with it if it hadn't been for you meddling kids. That was the last time meddling was used. Now, meddling, meddling, meddling. Everybody's meddling with everything. Meddling is enjoying quite the renaissance, which just goes to show you, never give up. Never give up. And that's the Weekly Worldview for this week, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at Denver Bible Church, and American Right to Life, and of course, my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.